All right, g'day and welcome to another edition of Comp Talk here, episode 92 on Luke's Lounge here, the Riptide Podcast, where we dissect everything bodyboarding related of the competitive world, mainly the recent wrap-up over in the Canary Islands, the IBC Fronton King Pro has concluded. We have a winner and we have a world champion, and to dissect everything about this glorious event, I'm sitting here virtually with my good friend, Sean Gregory Cooper. Coops, thanks for joining me, bro.
Thanks for having me, brother. It's been a long season, hasn't it? And here we are at the end of it. Fucking good times. And I think they kind of saved the best till last in our opinions, I suppose. And
There was so much cream out there, eh?
Yeah, like, I mean, it was fucking pretty brutal, the conditions, but the wave just tends to just serve up the goods no matter how bad the fucking conditions are, so.
Well, dude, it's so funny you say that. Like, let's get straight into it and give our ratings, but, like, from an athlete's point of view, I swear to God I kept hearing in the commentary that Amore wouldn't even bother surfing these days, a local Canary Islander, an expat from France, looking at these conditions and kind of turning his nose up, so to speak. So then to see the comp run in there, those sort of conditions, mind you, you know, the first and second and third day, I definitely had pumping waves. And then those devil winds kind of came in and they were plagued with a little bit of, you know, more junky wind swell. But the air bowls came in, the air games had to be solidified. It was still throwing up punchy as bowls with the odd backdoor ramp. And if you knew what you're doing out there, there were lefts and rights on a platter. And obviously towards the end of the finals day, it kind of did peter out a little bit, but still highly contestable. And man, in my opinion, I'm going to go high on the judging scale for this event. I'm giving a 4.5 to a 4.75, just for a little bit of variation there, because out of five, because I was enthralled. I have not watched a comp the whole way through like this for a very long time. Mind you, I have just got out of hospital and had a lot of downtime with a case of elephantitis in the elbow. But, mate, like, it was so entertaining. How did you see it, Coops?
Yeah, like, I was, like, the time zones, it's not great, but you do get to sneak in a few heats before you kind of hit the hay type thing. So I was kind of, like, my missus didn't love it, but every night I'm like, oh, fuck, I think the comp's on it, and I'd, like, just throw it straight up. And she, like, we always, like, wind down the day by watching something on Netflix, and then I'm like, nah, I'm watching this, mate. Like, this is sick. And it, on the bad days, the good days, it was really entertaining. I don't know, it's just such a fun wave to watch the best bodyboarders surfing, and there was a lot on the line with the world title thing was sick. Like, it could have ended straight away, and it kind of dragged on for a bit, and then it got a little bit kind of more entertaining when Amir got knocked out, and then it was like, fuck, what, like, anything could happen. But I mean, unfortunately, we were talking about the round. Which one was it? Round five or round four? The Repercharge round with no one lost. Like, it was pumping. It was glassy clean. It wasn't that big. It was only like 4 or 5 foot. And like that, it was so entertaining to watch that. And I kind of wish that was the last day, mate, because it would have been a killer, you know. Like, but, like we said before, it was still sick, even if it was, it was like suck rock and a southerly, you know, and it was still serving up the goods. So, that's definitely the best spot.
For sure, dude. I was about to just add on to what you were saying and just say that we need to pay homage to this ridiculous little lava outcrop that's made its way off the cliffs of Gran Canaria there. Like, obviously, it's a very volcanic place. Haven't been there myself, but just, you know, watching so much footage from there, and especially all the, the IBC has done a great job linking in with all the Galdar tourism over there, and you know, locking in a probably very lucrative and logistically pleasing deal there, because the comp has run so smoothly. The production value, like the camera guys, you know, everything was like on point. The infrastructure there was great. You can obviously poke holes in the judges every now and again, like mind you, speaking about with a couple of people during the week, especially, you know, drawing attention to Amore's 10 in, I believe it was round 5 or 6, that straight air reverse when it was still semi-pumping off the right bowl. That was amazing. Probably not a single move kind of score giving you a straight out 10. Like, I kind of disagree with that. But, yeah, everything on a whole was just epic. And it just showed once again that it is the perfect destination to crown a world champion. It's a perfect destination for high-end quality bodyboarding, you know, and when you get the world's best riders there, or, you know, a very large chunk of them, and anything can happen, eh? I was so into it. And as we were saying before, like, the comp goes for a long time, Coops. Like, it goes over 6 days, bro, and I was into it. It was almost like a fucking cricket test match. Like, just sign me up. It was crazy.
Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, like, you can pick it apart, I suppose. I swear they're a bit big, don't you reckon? Like, a bit long, because that kind of, even though we're still loving it at the end, it could have got picked apart a little bit more, I suppose, if it was a bit smaller, and then those amazing days could have lined up for the finals, maybe. I mean, that's the only thing I could criticize, really. Even though
I get you.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know. Like, but in saying that, they're in the Canary Islands. They're very windy, these islands, man. Like, it's a massive windsurfing spot to go to the Canaries, and it's the windsurfers go there for a reason, mate. It's because the fucking winds as windy as it gets. So these days are coming. They're always going to be there. You know what I mean? But like, and I mean, at least they still got swell and this, that, the other. It's a good way to finish. I mean, watching some of the guys, like especially Tristan, he you watch some of the waves he's trying to catch, and it's like, whoa, what's he going that for? Like 2 foot sidewashes, and then it just grow into this thing down the line. It was like, oh, it might have been the camera angle, but some of them were like, whoa, look at this thing. Like, it came
out. No. Bang on, bro. I really think it came down to, and like, it was evident in the final. You saw Amore and Tristan reach the final with the two kind of form surfers of the comp, in my opinion. You know, Amore blowing everyone out of the water, Tristan grinding at times, but still always looked really confident and sure of himself. But it just indicated that there were gems out there. You just had to know that special piece of reef. And it's like watching Ryan Sewell at Nugent, or Andrew Lester at the Island, or Sean Gregory Cooper at a special reef down at Wollongong. You know what I mean? There's like people that pick the eyes out of these conditions, and they know the ones to go. And yeah, I remember watching a couple of Tristan's waves going, fuck, is this cunt just looking to do a forward spin here? Like, what is going on? And then out of nowhere, this lip will quickly throw over, and he's just there to pounce, boom, backflip. And it's like, there's your 5 or 6 points that you need to progress to the next round. There's your backup score. He was just doing it time and time again, where Amore's approach throughout the whole comp, you know, not maybe his approach, just like his natural skill level and his, you know, being his home break, he was flaring, man. That 10-point ride, you had so many crazy, like, you know, half backflip, half air reverses out of these huge, you know, feathering onshore bowls on the left. Like, he obviously favors the left heavily, a lot more over the right, but could go both ways, and it was just so incredible to watch him win, to make the way out of the final. But I dare say, man, he would be salty as fuck not to get one back on Tristan after they met in the 2019 final out there, getting beaten by Tristan then, and now 5 years later being beaten by him again in a similar situation. It would really sting as like a, you know, an older, more mature competitor on tour, knowing that he probably doesn't have that many finals left in him per se. I'm not saying he couldn't go and win, you know, next year's tour, but he is getting that, you know, later stage of his career, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of say it every contest he's in. It's like, oh, how many more is he going to follow? Like, this is the one he's always going to do because he lives there. So I think we'll be seeing him for a long time to come in the Canary Islands. It's just whether he follows the tour. But, mate, he was on. Like, he was definitely I would say he was the best surfer in the event. The final was scrappy, so it was kind of like it was nearly amazing when Tristan did that massive backflip. It was like, oh, this is like the best thing of the comp, but then you know, just kind of the wave overtook him. But the final was just a bit lackluster, wasn't it?
It was.
How good the event was. It was a shame because it's like all the energy got sucked out of the semis because the semis were fucked up, eh?
Oh, man, there was something in the water in those semis where everyone, obviously you get into the latter end of the competition and you know, a lot of the slack weight, so to speak, has been peeled off and you know, you're down to the gritty core of the best competitors going around. But like, you know, you remember Tristan and Yuri Valadao's heat pretty close, but, you know, both going as hard as they could on those rights and just launching themselves off time and time again. And Amore and Gabriel Braga's heat, man, like in the semifinal, I think we were speaking off air before, we've got a crown that is the most, you know, jam-packed, action-packed heat of the whole entire competition. They were going blow for blow.
Yeah, like if you wanted to go back and watch something, like that was definitely in the time zone for us where we were definitely asleep. Like I'm pretty sure that would have been like 3 a.m. But
yeah,
when I watched it back, I was like, whoa, that was sick. It was a little bit repetitive on the Brazilians' side, but we'll still give it to him because he was launching backflips after backflips. But fuck, when Amore was like, they were just going like blow for blow, and I think they were taking the lead, like blow for blow. But then when Amore did that fucking air reverse loopy thing, it was like, whoa, that was so good, bro.
It almost felt like the energy shifted then. It was kind of game over from there on in, and Amore just showed that hot streak and hand that he'd been running with the whole, you know, through the whole entire comp. And you know, let's talk about the quarterfinal between Maxim Castillo and Tristan Roberts, man. Like, Maxim comes out of the blocks with a fuck-off lofty invert. Like, he was checking out some satellites up for NASA there in the orbit, man, because he was levitating for a little bit. And you really had Tristan on the ropes, man, former world champion on the ropes. And it only kind of came back within the last 5 minutes of the heat where Tristan started to claw some scores back on the rights and just building a house like he does. Maxim, you know, with that huge score, I'm just going to quickly, I think it was pretty close to a 10.
What heat was this? Is this in the quarterfinals or is that?
This is in the quarterfinal. So Maxim opened up with a 9.5, brother, could only back it up with a 4.5, where Tristan started building a house. Like an 8 is definitely an excellent score, but Tristan can get them on a semi-regular basis. And then he's backed up with a 7.25, coming with a combined heat total of 15.25 and beats Maxim with 14 points, man, sitting there with a 9.5, man. Like, do you know how dirty the Frenchman would have been? He would have been fucking chucking bottles of fucking Shiraz left, right, and center. The cunt would have been devastated because that was his chance to kind of get to that, you know, that coveted in semifinals. And you could, I heard in a posted interview with him, he was like, I lost the chance to podium in that quarterfinal, and it was really sitting dirty with him.
Oh, that would have been devastating. That happened. It's such a common occurrence too. But the worst part of it is it happened early. So it was like the first wave of the heat. It's so sick when you see someone do something that's not a backier. Like, because it was like a pit and he got flung like out of the bowl. So sick. Like, it's it's something that they always talk about in the WSL. They're like, oh, you don't want to lose on a 9.5 or a 10. You know what I mean? Like 9.5 in these comps are pretty much 10s. And
for sure.
Yeah, like the bed karate will be coming in strong, mate, because it's hard to get over that stuff because you just know that you had it in your hands and you just couldn't. Like it's almost like you put more pressure on yourself. You'd be better off having a 7, and then you just know, oh, well, I've just got to get, you know, whatever you got to get. But when you got the 9.5, you think, oh, I don't need much. And then all of this pressure comes on top of you, mate.
Especially as you said, like in the first, I think it was in the first 4 or 5 minutes of the heat, he's launched this thing and then he's set himself up, put Tristan right under pressure, and he let it slip through his fingers. Like, you know, it just would have been devastating. And then to watch Tristan go on and win the comp, like knowing that he had him by the balls, it's like, man, he's going to finish his beers tonight and his exotic Spanish stimulants and wake up a depressed, devastated man after that after party, you know what I mean? Like, No shade thrown him. He's a great bodybuilder and I enjoy watching him compete. And I really feel like in the last 5 years, he's made himself as like a staple on the world tour. And, you know, he mixes it with the best, but that's a critical mistake, man, at probably the year's biggest comp.
Yeah. And Tristan's so gnarly, eh? Like he's just that guy. Like you just, he must be a nightmare to surf against. He just seems to just, no matter what position he's in, he knows he can get out of it. Every now and then he doesn't, but it's more often than not, it doesn't seem to faze him. You know,
he's very mental calm. Strength
must, yeah, his mental strength must be massive, mate, because it doesn't look like he's panicking or anything. It's like, yeah, I'll just get another one. It's all good. You know,
yeah, and he really trusts his technique. Like, I know we harp on about backflips being, you know, overdone year in, year out, especially after the 2012 moment with Pierre and how he set the kind of world tour alight with that move, and it's kind of stayed ever since. But knowing that Tristan, like knowing that he can go to that maneuver and, as I'll use the term again, build a house and get back to, you know, even, I guess, even playing field against his competitor. And then it just takes that one, you know, pure bit of brilliance, or that one, you know, heavy nug that he gets that's just a couple of point or half a point better than his competitor, and he's just got him. And then once, you know, you've got your foot on the throat of your competitor, coming down to those last couple of minutes, especially where the conditions were deteriorating at front on. Again, still great waves and very contestable, and I was super into it, like we've said. But, yeah, it makes it near impossible. And, like, you just watched people come undone. Like, even, for example, in the final, man, Tristan is holding off Amore. He's holding him off. He's just keeping himself in front of the points. Moz needs, like, a 5.25 in the last, like, three or four minutes. Tristan gets a left, does a backflip, ups the requirement to a 5.4, which you'd think to himself, oh, that's nothing. It's almost a wasted wave from Tristan or whatever. But that move, that hustle, that getting in Amore's head, Amore then, in my opinion, went for that ride on that double up, went for the backflip. Yes, it was a critical section that I either could have launched into the stratosphere, but did have a lot of chandelier on it, so you had to time it perfectly. But him being the local that he is and all the years of experience out there, you'd bank him to do it. But I felt like the pressure of Tristan just building that house, putting his foot on the throat even further as the clock started winding down. And Moz, in my opinion, even with all his experience on the tour, crumbled. I think he crumbled with that right and undercooked the fucking backflip that could have won him the whole fucking comp, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it was like it just didn't cup out. You know, I reckon if that whitewash bit that was on the wave, like if that wasn't there, that was going to be the biggest mega ramp. And I think he thought it was going to be, and it just kind of held off on him. Like, it was kind of like when he hit it, he went, yeah, I got this. And then he kind of panicked midair and went, uh-oh, I didn't really hit it. And then he kind of just flopped around. And it was like, oh, spewing, man. Because that was, Like you said, man, have you checked to see whether if Tristan didn't go that way before, would have he have got the score? Because that'd be
No, 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 no. He wouldn't have. So
he
Amore
still
was
wouldn't
only
have got
awarded
it.
like a 4 or 4.2. So it wouldn't have even cut. It was still a point away from what Tristan had there. And I guess with Tristan's priority, if he didn't go that left, he would have gone that wave anyway. You know what I mean? So it's
I
kind of
just
like it's.
it all the it's crazy with Tristan, just like you were saying before, like we always talk about backflips and that, but he's so good at them that, like, as if he wouldn't do them, you know? And every time he
Course.
does one, they're 1 to 2 points better than everyone else's. So it's like
Bro,
he's got it's just amazing.
it's like in any sport, Coops. It's like you can win pretty and you can win ugly. And if you're getting awarded points for backflips and the judges are paying them and the criteria is paying them, but you've got people up in, different parts of the grandstand or different parts of the world harping on about it. Like I know Mitch Rawns has said a lot about the backflip being the staple on tour, and Kinney's spoken about it and all that stuff. And they're well within their right to think that because, I'm of the same opinion, and I know you are too at times. It's like gets repetitive. But if they're paying it and it's gonna win you a fucking front-on King Pro in 2024 against arguably one of the world's best ever bodyboarders in Amore, especially with the longevity he's got, you're fucking locking in. And man, that final could have been so different. How was his backflip at the start? Like, one of the best lines from the commentary of the whole comp, I'm quite critical of that, is the talking about you riding and how it was like so similar of the launch he got, the hang time he got in the air, landing back in the barrel, spinning around, and it was almost a mirror image. On remember that lefty got in the front on was the thing. I think that was 2019 too. When he did win it, and that backflip back into the barrel, like Jesus, bruh.
He come out of that one though and then went back into another barrel. It
Yeah,
was
so they awarded
like,
it. Yeah, I fully
yeah,
get why
they
they didn't award
award.
it
He
this
was going
time.
for the world title too. Like, if he didn't make that backflip that time, he didn't win the world title. It was crazy. That's how close it
Yeah.
was.
He's
But
Steely, man. Tristan Steely.
that one in the final, like they split the peak, but that was massive. And he makes it, mate. It's just that the wave just cupped out and kind of grinded, which most of them weren't grinding after the section was done. So it was a bit of a unique wave, but fuck, it was big. Can you imagine seeing that in real life if you were sitting in the
Oh,
channel? You'd like, oh
and
my God.
if you're out in the water and you watch him, crunch his fucking rib cage down on that, flat bed of cylindric goodness, like it's just like, yeah, because we all know, you do a backflip in any sort of session, ARS and invert and air reverse, and you get popping and hang, like. You feel it and you feel good and you like the feeling, you know it was a good move. I've never done a move that big, man, and
No,
I've never had a
mate.
move it come down and you know what I mean? And that just is
Yeah.
the difference on the world stage of like what people need to appreciate that these athletes are doing out there. And mind you, like we haven't even touched on Anthony Miller and his crazy antics with just dragging his carcass along that reef and sending on any heavy water nug that came his way. But like there's consequences out there, man. Like a dude
Yeah.
died there, man. Like people wearing helmets. It's nothing to fuck around with. And they're just going out there willy-nilly to win a bodyboarding comp and launching themselves 10 feet in the air, essentially over dry reef. It's wild.
They're fully sending it, eh? The thing I like about that Tristan thing is, like, Amore, I reckon he was the surfer of the comp. He only just didn't win this comp, and I reckon it would have been one of his biggest ones, like, because it's been a while since he's won one and that. But, like, that backflip he does in the final, they must be getting pretty big, these backflips, if we did see them in real life. Because you see Amore, when he does them, he kind of fans his legs out. Like, it's kind of like, well, he's probably feeling pretty high.
Yeah.
which looks pretty, it's probably not my favorite look for a backy, but I mean, he controls it and gets the score, so whatever, man. Like, it's very European, really. But like, Tristan kind of holds, like, he kind of crosses his legs, but he also keeps them tight. Like, he doesn't really fan out his legs, and it looks, it would be so hard to do on how big those backies are, like, especially that one in the final. So I thought that was pretty sick. But the other thing to make mention of Tristan Roberts is he wins the comp, but he was not in the world title race. And I used to remember in the ASP days, like Slater, like even Fanning and that, if someone won the world title or was going, they were out of the world title race, a lot of them would stop going to events. And it's a massive credit to him, because he could easily say, look, I'm not going to spend the money on this. I'm not going to win the world title this year. I'll go and do a surf trip. I'll go and do this and that and spend my money on that. But he still goes, still wins. Like that's pretty cool. You know what I mean? He easily could have taken a rain check on that comp.
100%. And it shows his competitive nature. It shows his drive to win, and it shows probably what's reflecting in his mental capacity to win these, you know, tight heats and you know, really competitive comps, is because he just wants to win. He's a winning animal. I think I said it in the intro to the podcast that we did with him on the Riptide podcast, Luke's Lounge, and he when you're speaking with him and when you're, you know, locked in kind of conversation with him, and especially talking about something he's passionate about, you can see that it consumes him, and like, he puts all his eggs in one basket and kind of goes for it. And it just seems to me that he's got that fire in the eye, man. You know what I mean? He's got that competitive streak that you need to win world titles. And it's like, you know, comparing to, say, like when you look at a, let's keep it on the Spanish front, like a Nadal in tennis. Like, you look at his eyes and you can see that man wants to rip and tear and annihilate every one of his competitors. You know, you see it, I guess, in Slater, for example, or like Andy Irons, or, you know, the greats in surfing. Like, when people like Gabriel Medina is a perfect fucking example. It's like, when they get in a mindset and a zone, it's like, this is my goal and I must complete it at all costs. It's almost like a fucking Terminator. But yeah, it's just so cool to see. And he's just looks like he's one of the wildest competitors on tour. But dude, let's talk about the world title race, and let's talk about what could have been and what was. You know, Amidez dropping out pretty early in the competition, really leaving the door open for Pierre. And it just seemed like, to me, don't want to be harsh on the Frenchman, but he didn't look like he got out of second gear, and he just wasn't in rhythm, wasn't in sync. And it was evident in his clash with Amore in round seven. Like, Amore wiped the floor with him, man. 14.0 points to 6.75 points to, you know, two Frenchmen going at it. Like, mind you, Amore is a local there, obviously, and I understand he surfs it a lot more than Pierre, but I just thought the Frenchman was gonna get up a bit more, knowing the occasion and knowing what was going on. Like, I know he would have been thinking a lot about it, but, you know, pressure gets to the best of him. But it's like, just wanted to see some, like, a flare up, like a bit of swelling grit getting in there, you know. Just didn't see any fucking grit.
Yeah, it was the heat that Pierre got beaten in. It was, I don't want to say it was a fizzer, but it was very one-sided. Like, Pierre, did you watch the start of it? And Pierre, like, was sitting, like, kind of to go left, and Amore was sitting to go right, which I'm pretty sure they were just going to go right the whole time. And, like, Pierre paddled to go left and then flipped and went right on the first wave of the heat, which, you know, lots of people
claim that that's the most important wave of the heat. You know what I mean? You got to get the first wave. And it looked like it was a pretty good one. It kind of like had a bit of a lump in it, but then he just flipped around. He went right. I think Amoria was like, oh, I'm not buying into this because he doesn't want to get an interference. And that set the tone of the rest of the heat because he kind of got an okay barrel. Wasn't that good. That wave was kind of shitty. And then Amoria just picked the eyes out of it, mate. Like, it kind of turned into a bit of a local kind of heat, like where the local just knew exactly what to do. And it was a bit of a bummer, like, that was actually one heat that I was like, you know, like the semis were sick and that type of thing. Like, that the waves were there, but they didn't show up at the same time. And I kind of found like that there was no real momentum with Pierre in the event. Like, he was a bit down on the waves and stuff like that, which was totally he was right, like, because they were tough, you know what I mean? Some of the earlier rounds, well, they were tough.
But if you look at the moves that came out of it, Coops, like, would you say that if you were up for the occasion, you could have got the scores that you needed? Like, I even look at, say, Anthony Miller, for example, who hasn't surfed that way before, has experience in heavy waves coming from the East Coast and surfing a lot of waves around Southern Sydney and down the South Coast. But, like, he was finding ones that you could launch off and you can get barreled on. And Pierre surfed that a lot more than he has. I know I'm being harsh on him here, but I just really felt like he almost wasn't there for it. You know what I mean?
Like, he's the world. He's the top three best bodyboarder in the world, especially in contests. I know exactly what you're saying. Like, we'll think about a midair as well. So in the round six, a midair got 6.65 total against Tristan Roberts and William Luján from España. And he had a fucking shocker, mate. Like, I was watching it and it was like, oh my God, he was full choking, eh? And I reckon the pressure was getting to him, eh?
For sure.
Yeah, like, the back end of his whole season, he didn't look good. Like, it was like, he was on such a roll, so there's no pressure. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm winning. And then all of a sudden you start thinking about the world title and it just goes south, you know?
So for sure. And, I mean, he's a young man. He's 22 years old, you know? Like, he's I heard in the post-world title interview, I guess, like, he's, you know, he's studying a lot to become in medicine this year, to become a nurse. He didn't feel like he was training enough, but yet still was getting the results. And then I guess for a person who probably hasn't, you know, he's dreamed of it, but to not have the realization kind of come to fruition until you smack bang there at the kind of end of the road with it all ahead of you, and you've just got to put a couple of last final performances in. I guess that's probably the difference we're talking about with, say, Tristan Roberts, who's won two world titles, has been there, has done it, and showed his mental capacity in this comp, where the two others, with Amira Soliveras and Pierre-Louis Costes, just seem to be – luck comes into it, waves and heats come into it, but if you're a true champion, which Pierre is for sure, and Amir is now a world title holder and a champion in his own right, so I'm not trying to take it away from it, but champions more often than not make their own luck. And I just felt like Pierre, you know, put Amir aside, just wasn't making his own luck, you know, and I just, maybe I have such high expectations for him because he is just such a world-class bodyboarder. You know, and you just want to see that fairy tale finish, because Amirez has probably got a lot more world titles to win and his coming career on the world tour. But yeah, I just wanted to see the Frenchman get up, bro. I just wanted to see it. Sure. I just wanted to,
yeah,
to see the goodness.
He hit a massive roadblock, fucking surfing against Amore, because it was like he was easily the best guy. Like, if you look at all of round seven. Like, he was, like, other than Tristan, he was the one that you didn't want to pull, and he got him.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like, and in those
conditions, maybe
fucking hell, man.
Definitely air bowls and you know, just, yeah, all those tapered lips and stuff. I guess probably the only person we haven't mentioned, we need to give another, you know, huge shout out to the Brazilian bull, Yuri Valadao, once again making his way all the way to the semifinals and just almost pulling a rabbit out of the bag there to end up in another fucking final against Tristan. It's just... Yeah, I mean, again, sorry, like he versed Tristan in the semifinals and got beaten by the eventual winner. But, bro, like, fuck, when will this cunt die? Like, it's unbelievable. It's just, he's
just, it just never ends, does it? It's fucked up, mate. Like, what the fuck is Yuri Valadera doing? Like, it's
a never ending story, Coops. It's beautiful. It brings a tear to my eye.
Yeah. Like, he's never gone away. It's amazing. He's going to be a statue of
you. I think in the off-season, we need to get his workout regime and diet and just see what's going on because,
yeah.
He must be eating shitloads of biltong and fried eggs and just kale salads.
Get him on the fucking potty, mate. He speaks English.
Probably should.
Fucking oath, mate. I'd love to know what a day in the life of Yuri Valadao is. Like the sponsorships. Does he work? Does he not? Like, is he pretty much the king when he's walking around the streets? Like,
does he stand back naked and like give any vitamin D to his ball sack? Like, yeah, all the things we want to know. I fully get that.
Exactly. Yeah. He's the fucking man, eh?
He's the man, bro.
Yeah, unbelievable. Like, another semi-final finish. Like, what did he end up on the rankings, do you know?
I think he was third or fourth. He was definitely in the top five.
Yeah, let me have a look because I'm interested. Oh, yeah, he came fifth. So we got Amire, Pierre. Jeez, he was close. Fuck, he was so close. Gabriel Braga ended up coming third, which is really cool. So yeah, he won.
He was Morocco. Consistent.
He won the first comp of the year, and yeah, it turned into a bit of a Gabriel Braga Amire Solavires show this year, and then Pierre kind of had a bit of a late running, and obviously Tristan came fourth, so and that would have been because of his win. Amore ended up coming sixth. Dave Hubbard came seventh, who wasn't even at the comp. Maxine Castillo in eighth. And then Moses Silva was in ninth. Oi, mate, Moses Silva's 10-point ride, I think it was in round five, was so sick. Like,
it was, eh?
Straight away, I was kind of thinking, wow, this guy's going to be real hard to beat. Because when I saw it live, and it was the day where it was like 4 to 5 foot and like glassy, and Tristan, he was surfing against Amore. Amore got a wave straight up. I think he did a backflip, and it was sick too. It was like, whoa, that was sick. And then all of a sudden, they were doing this interview, and then they go to the second wave of the set. And Moses does this air reverse, mate. It was like a breath of fresh air because it was not only different, but it was really technically hard the way he did it because it was kind of one of those nugget wrap-in bowls, but then landed in the wash and just popped out. It was like, fuck, that was awesome. So he's got a spot on tour. Even though he wasn't allowed to surf in last year's event, he was allowed this year, so that was good.
Yeah, it was good there was no punch-ons at the pre- and post-parties out at the front on King. Good to see everyone kept the shit in the bag and made it professional. But, yeah, dude, back to Moises. He's done it before on tour. I remember that 10 in Brazil? That ridiculous air adversity that he whipped. Again, he's obviously the air reverse is one of his go-to moves, but, like, yeah, to watch the power, to watch the flick, to watch the rotation, again, really tight and, you know, board close to his body and stuff. He's got a good lengthy career ahead of him. As long as he can keep his fisticuffs to himself and there's no more brawling in the back alleys of Galdar, we'll be sweet, brother. We'll be sweet. Oi, and another thing, you know, looking at the people who podiumed this year, Still wondering if the people at Podium last year had been paid for their podium appearance. And I was just wondering if this year there might be some payment. You know, if I was an athlete, I probably would be going up and demanding my check and cash on the spot just to make sure no one runs away with it. Because, yeah, we want our riders paid, and it'll be interesting to see if the money is coughed up after this great event. Again, not trying to throw shade on it, just trying to throw a couple of little, you know, drama-fueled, you know, side hustles into the mix here with this comp, because it had it all, but that's still hanging over its head. So as long as Tristan and Amore get paid, I think Amore get paid, right? He actually lives down the road. He'd be knocking on cunt's doors, but Tristan's another part of the world, so we'll see it. We'll see how it goes. But, I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, maybe send him a message. I want my money, bro. You fucking cough it up. The one thing the comp was missing was Liam Lucas.
Oh, devastating for Poodle, wasn't it? Devastating with that injury.
Devastating, mate. Like, he was coming in hot, and then just had to go a little bit too hot 2 days before the comp.
And Didn't he, man? Because he had some momentum in the Shark Island Challenge. Like, I know he had a shocker in that comp, but then he just got back from injury. He was really putting his fitness to the test. You know, in the months leading up, there was heaps of clips coming out from him at Pipe and Nugget, and he was surfing good, man. We were all like, oh, we're licking our lips. I know you and me on the last comp talk potty were really hyping it up and kind of looking at Anthony Miller as like more like a travel companion and someone who's going to, you know, in the years to come, fulfill the shoes of an Australian heavyweight on tour. And like Liam was kind of the guy, but the roles were reversed. And yeah, Liam just charging too hard at front on left and coming unstuck. He reckons, you know, listening to him on the commentary, which was sick. I was really glad the IBC got Anthony Miller and Liam Lucas both on the commentary to, you know, kind of give a breakdown of where Australian bodybuilding is at the moment, how their careers are going. And it was really nice to give me a time. I was so stoked on it. But you could hear Liam talk about the injury. And, man, he kind of just said, like, I haven't hit the reef like that almost ever in my life. And the way all that force just kind of you know, pushed down on his ankle and his leg, it sounded like it was an absolute doozy. The way he described the wave is he was coming down a little bit too late, went over a ledge, and then kind of got thrown into that trenches part of the wave. And we all know, like, you know, from 2024 Shark Island Challenge this year, man, Lester broke his shoulder in one of those trench waves when you kind of push down into the deep end. Me recently out the island with my elephantitis on my elbow, like that was the same thing, getting sucked up in a wave that pushed me into the trench. And I just, you know, came a guts with the reef. It sounds like Liam was on the same path. And it's just unforgiving, man. And when you see in the footage how flat bottom and gnarly and you know, no kanji is touching the bottom of front on reef. It just seems to be all bare, you know, boulder volcanic rock. So I can only imagine the pain old mate would have been in. And especially to not surf in the comp. Like, you can be injured and still go out there and have a go, but he must have been seriously injured.
Oh, fuck yeah. I was chatting to him on Instagram, and he basically said, oh, well, it was lucky it wasn't my head. Like, he would have been dead, mate. So, wow. You know, like, you can look at it any way you want. Like, the way, have you seen the clip?
Yeah, I have. Yeah. The way he gets
terrifying, eh? It's like, yeah. Oh, that's sickening.
And you know he's in the bad spot because it's like he gets kind of sucked up a bit and then pushed down, and you know that's like the full force of the wave coming down. You know, there's a lot of times where you can pop out the back or there's an explosion around you and it kind of pushes you up instead of down, and you just get a wild frog in and no hitting. But if you're in the trenches, man, you are in the fucking trenches. You got bullets raining down from the cliffs of Gallipoli. You got your Anzac brothers dying around you, and you know you're in the fucking trenches, all right? I'm getting real World War fucking two on you here. And was it World War Two? It was World War Two, Gallipoli, eh?
Do you want me to look it up?
No, don't. I'm pretty sure it was. So I just want to. I'm
so bad, mate. I don't know those things. I'm so Now I feel like an idiot because I should
No,
know,
cunt. I didn't even fucking know either. I was just spurting on a rant. You know, I mean, I shouldn't even gone there.
oh,
But
that's so embarrassing, mate.
bring
I just
it
I don't
back.
know those things, mate. I just like those technical, all of that stuff, it just blends into one big horror show to me. So it's like
Yeah, well, it's good you're not taking any notice of those wars. They're all fabricated and made for rich men to send off, you know, poorer working class men off to work so they could fucking make money and then just wave their big dicks around. So I reckon you're doing good. Keep it out of your head, Sean Gregory. No,
I'm going to
you're
go back to,
chatting.
I'm just going to watch Netflix and the IBC. Simple as that. So
Bro,
the
that's all you need. And then obviously to know how to do a really good waterline tile and a coping and you'll be sweet.
mate. And then eat a custard tart after it, and I'm good.
Oh, maybe do a review for Woodsy.
Mate, I tell you, I had one the other day. It was so, it's got to be one of the best I've had. It was so
Really,
good.
where'd you have it at?
Sylvania. Oh my God, it
Really?
was so good.
What bakery was that, Sylvania? I need to go there. It's fucking in my hood.
I'll send it to you. It's amazing.
Oh, keep
And
it
then
in
I
the
had a really good
DLA.
one. I had a really good one in Thorold the other day where aesthetically it looked amazing. And I went, oh, this is going to be 10 points. And then I had it and it just wasn't that tasty. Like it had
Bit
everything going
bland.
for it, but not the taste. So,
Yeah.
what does that mean?
And
They don't
you.
put enough like vanilla in there or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's so much that goes into a good custard tart, but I have you weighed in on the dubious discussion point that Woodsy always brings up, and a lot of his reviews about the cinnamon being placed on the top, not the nutmeg, which we all know it's fucking nutmeg, but he keeps calling it cinnamon just to piss everyone else off. And the real diehards on there that are like real tart fanatics, they get so off it.
What's the difference between nutmeg and cinnamon? Because this is the thing, I
Oh,
don't know. Like, what the
mate,
fuck is
aren't you
nutmeg? I
cultured,
thought it
you fucking Ingadine legend? What are you talking about?
nut. Like, I thought it was fucking cinnamon myself. Because that's
Look,
what
I
it
kind of
tastes
did
like.
too.
Is
Yeah,
it
I
really
think it was.
nutmeg?
I according to the OGs in the tart world, it's nutmeg. And if you say anything different, you'll have your hands cut off.
But surely that is case to case. They're not all going to be, because like some of the Asian bakeries, mate, they're just reaching for the fucking the cinnamon and they're just chucking it on there, don't you reckon?
Yeah, they probably are, but mate, there's an international standard. There's a governing body. Haven't you heard of the CTAO, Custard Tarts of Australia? Like these cunts are laying down the law, bros. And if you go and grab that cinnamon and don't throw the nutmeg on there, like you know about it.
Let me just clarify. I've just got it up here. Nutmeg is a seed or ground spice derived from that seed or several tree species of the genus Mysterica.
I shouldn't have
This
got
is
into
so
the
fucked
Latin.
up. Oh
Oh,
my God.
can you look up the CTOA, the Custard Tarts of Australia? And I just want to get that criteria up, you know, for what a custard tart should be.
Oh my God. Okay, that we just went off, we just derailed for a second. Listen, the other thing we're going to talk about is the Pro Junior, because it was those, I mean they do a lot of backflips. I'm just going to flat out say it, they do lots and lots of backflips, but that's cool. Jai Taylor
Monkey see,
did
monkey do.
it. Jai Taylor did an invert and he won his heat from doing an invert. He got 14 points in total. So that was cool to see Jai Taylor flying the flag. But unfortunately, the wheels fell off. Like it just got a little bit too gnarly. The other thing that happened to the contest was they had to condense it. So the conditions were looking pretty bad. So instead of stretching, I believe that the comp was supposed to go for even another day. And
Oh.
instead of making it two man heats, they kept it at four men to the very, very end. So
in the juniors.
In the juniors and the men as well. So I think the men's were
That's right, because when I was looking at the, it's usually round six it goes into men or man. It didn't come until round seven. Yeah, I was surprised at that, because it's usually after the you've got like the elimination round, and then you know the first proper round, I guess, of the comp that is round five, because you've got the trials and coming into it. But yeah, to see it kind of go into round six, I was like, that looks different. That's unbelievable. Well,
in the grommets, it was the semifinals. They went to men on men. So they really like condensed it. Which, I mean, you know, that's probably the way it needed to be, mate. If that was the better day for what was coming, like, fuck me. Can you imagine how bad it would have been? Like, if it got worse? Like, because it still looks sick, but if it had got worse, like, in between the sequins, it was really bad, do you reckon? Like,
oh, dude, 100%. I've got it up here on the TV right now. It's the semifinals of the juniors just in the background playing, and man, it's like, as Amore said, like you wouldn't really consider going to surf it, which is unbelievable. Like, I'd be out there in a jiffy, but you can see in between the proper waves, there's just chop side energy, fucking, like, only because of that reef being so shallow and flat bottom does it draw enough water off even in the most horrific conditions to make it contestable. Like, hats off to the reef and everything about it, but yeah, like it's amazing what the IBC does over 6 days to get that comp run, man. Like, it's one, like, the staffing power, two, the logistical nightmare, as you just mentioned, about trying to reschedule heats and make sure you're getting the best of the conditions and everyone's getting a fair go. And three, to then broadcast it to the rest of the world and to get it out each day with like heat recaps, replays, highlights. Like, it's a bodyboarding equivalent to the WSL. Like, I'm going to give the IBC a huge pat on the back for this one. Like, they did a really good job, man.
They did an amazing I reckon it was one of the best bodyboarding comps I've seen in ages. And the waves still didn't deliver. Like, they delivered a little bit, but whatever they did different, I don't know if it was a different person running it, but it was really good, hey. I thought that
it was good.
The commentary was pretty good. The one guy that was on there a lot that spoke really good English, he was good because he mixed it in with the English and the Spanish and whatever.
Pablo.
But he kind of held it together. Like, he stuck to his English and he didn't, like, because and then they had like a Canarian guy on there and he was speaking a little bit of English and a lot of Spanish. I get that that's what they've got to do. So that's cool. Like, I can live with that stuff. Like, it, you know, you don't understand what they're saying, but it's like, it's fine, because they're mainly Spanish people in the comp anyway. So, it was watchable. It wasn't like it was, you remember Morocco early in the year? Like, it was a train wreck, right, mate. You couldn't watch it. Like,
yeah.
So fuck, they, like you said, I don't know what they did, but it was really, really good. So
for sure. And maybe it's just after a long year, man, and the IBC being together properly now, you know, since I know they were there just kind of before COVID and what, like, whatever, but, you know, to have like a now lengthy stretch of time where they're, you know, strengthening relationships with different promoters or different governments and tourism agencies and brands and sponsors, and they've just got the key people in place, and maybe that's, you know, like all that hard work that they've been putting in. And, you know, when you can have some negative things to say about them, and you know, we have on this podcast, we've also given some really good positive feedback too, but, you know, you can kind of sometimes get stuck in that loop of negativity and think to yourself, oh, like, it's never going to change or whatever, da-da-da. And as you just said, the waves didn't really turn up this comp. There was a couple of moments, but, like, overall, you were enthralled as a viewer because they were doing the simple things right. Like, they had the good broadcast. They've got, you know, your QR code screen up on the screen where you can just, you know, link to the website and see the live scores. You've got constant replays. You've got graphics that come in with the replays that are epic. There's no misspelt names like Louis Rimmington, for example. Like everything was above board. Like it's you know, coming from, you know, and obviously you've been a contest director too, Coops, like, you know, coming from that little bit of background that we have and knowledge, when you see those 1%ers being nailed, then you know that they're on the right path. And yeah, it was sick. And if this can happen year in, year out, and those other events on tour improve in the same way. Like, I know Morocco was the first time this year, so obviously you can't be too harsh, and it's a third world country, so it's, you know, you're dealing with more roadblocks, so to speak. But yeah, like it'll just get better. But it just could be a small couple of tweaks to the schedule. Like, if we could just get Pipeline back on there and obviously Eureka, then I think we'd be cooking with gas, and this would just be every comp you'd be tuning in like we did with this, the front on one here, and just and happy to be a spectator, eh? Like, it's yeah, it's really good for bodyboarding what this comp did.
Yeah. Like I've said before, that they should just condense the tour and put all their effort into a couple of events like Eureka, this one, and Pipe, or something else, like something like that. Like, and have the other ones as, you know, national events or whatever, like that. That's because I swear it's that they, you know what I mean? Like, put
for sure
the effort in lesser things, less is more. And I think, and they could have like qualifying events, and then you had to do one qualifying event to get to the grand slams, like the big three. They could do like a triple crown or, I don't know. I just think that they're always trying to go too big too quick. And
look what they did with the juniors. You know, yeah. Proofs in the pudding with what you were saying off air before, and we were applauding that sort of structure of like having the two major results, you know, or the your one major result, whatever it was, if it had enough points to get you to the end of front on, you could,
yeah,
you know, serve for a world title. Like, I mean, life to have a couple more comps, like you said, then maybe it is a triple crown. But yeah, I'm in total agreement with it. It's got to be condensed in a certain way where you're not just tuning in to watch trial heats and that's like being held in pumping conditions, you know, like there were. It's, yeah, it's got to be,
yep,
just condense a bit.
Yeah, but unfortunately, it's probably a money train, so it's like, you know, but yeah, it's a business, you know what I mean? So they need to have the events to make the money.
100%. Wait, let's, yeah.
Whatever.
I was just going to say, let's give a quick little shout out again to Jai Taylor. I know you mentioned before about his invert and how well he was doing, but like, and unfortunately, he couldn't go further in the comp, but mammoth effort for even just to get there in the first place. What he did over in the Maldives was epic, especially in the conditions in which he was operating over in the Maldives, being really sick and under the weather and kind of not knowing the local lay of the land. For him to go over to Gran Canaria with a 20K budget and splash his cash and have a good time, it was sick. And I'm stoked he did. I'm stoked he represented Australia because yeah, no one else in the juniors were. I guess Anthony Miller went over there to compete too, but went further in the men's division than the juniors. But yeah, just really cool to see him realize a dream and go fight for world title. So hats off to Jai.
100%, man. Well done. So stoked for him. Stoked for. It's so nice to see an Australian in there. Like, not trying to be patriotic, but it you do get a little bit like it, and you kind of miss seeing the Aussies on tour. So that's we nearly, like, it was 16. Anthony Miller go for both divisions, and he was sending it. Like, he was getting a lot of airtime, really, like on the broadcast. So, like, he was kind of turning heads. It just kind of, like, hit a few roadblocks on both sides of the draw. But, like, that doesn't matter. Like, he's got to learn from his losses and then grow, because he's only a grommet. And stoked he went over, man, because I couldn't imagine it being a cheap trip. So,
So yeah, that's good. It's good for Australia. Apparently, Jai Taylor's brother's really good. Hey, like I was talking to a guy from a shout out. His name's Alex Martin, and his son Jarvis Martin went to the. Oh my God, I'm gonna cook this. It's a Grom a Grom contest in it's called Future Groms, and it was in the Gold Coast, and
Oh yeah.
apparently his brother, I think he's young, he's like 9 or something, and he's like heaps better than everyone else that were at his age. It was like, whoa, this kid's gonna be good. So that's pretty cool.
That's epic. Yeah, that's really cool to hear, especially with his bigger brother kind of leading the way. Like that's yeah, good signs. Let's keep him on a boog and not on a surfboard.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, maybe these future Grom events might, man, it might get legs. Kind of been chatting to a few people about it, and if we can get a couple going and get the Groms going again in Australia, and it could grow into a beautiful Australian flower. What do you think, Luke? Could be
Yeah,
amazing.
I think a lovely local Banksia would be great. Just flowering in the springtime, just not dropping out anyone's head or any hay fever. Just stunning there in the Australian spring sun. I reckon it'd be beautiful, Sean Gregory. Beautiful.
Yeah, mate.
I think.
What a beautiful year we had. It was amazing. Hey, how's your arm? How's your fucking your infection?
Yeah, definitely better. Was pretty hairy there for a bit. Like, not so I'm gonna lose my life. I was in any sort of like real danger, but more so just the time I'd spent in hospital, the size my arm got, and the pain I was experiencing. I was like, far out. I felt like I'd broken my elbow, but which I knew kind of wasn't possible because I'd hit the reef a week earlier and I was fine, like sore, but I could still use it and move it. But yeah, just an infection, man. They got in through the cut, turned into cellulitis, a bacterial infection. They could never grow the culture. And in the end, I just got out of there after 4 days, sent home, still with a cannula in my arm, and then would go up to the hospital for the next 2 or 3 days and just get IV antibiotics. And then I've been good ever since, but still can't go in the water, still can't really exercise. I've got my bike back out, so I'm starting to do late
Is
night
that
ride.
because, like, how come? Like, is there a risk that it could come back or something?
Yeah, just it's because it's still slightly open the cut and don't want to get anything else
Yeah, of
in
course.
it from there. But yeah, that's why I couldn't come down to the Cold Coast comp on the weekend, which I was pretty devout about because I don't come around that often. But yeah, it is what it is. And I've had heaps of waves this year and I think about all the sessions we've had and even you and me have shared on the odd occasion. It's like you don't really understand, and you kind of take it for granted when you're just healthy and cruising around. But then when you're in that hospital bed, and even the waves weren't pumping, but just to have like the thought of going for surf in the back of your head, and what's the island doing, or like is there waves at Sacroc and da 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 da. It's just yeah, it becomes like a full mental game. Like I know you play too in the back of your head, so it's like. Yeah, good to be on the mend and good to have you some arm back again and back at work and slaving away for the family, mate, bringing home something to fucking cook on the table. But nah, it's all good, Coops. It's all good.
Bringing home the bread, eh? And just quickly, just to recap what you were just talking about, had an amazing Cold Coast Bodyboard Club the other day. The Groms were frothing, sick for the Groms, mate. It was small and clean and whatever. But just a quick shout out to the club treasurer, Idris Wace, took the W, and he was ripping, mate. Idris Wace, killing it.
Big Idris, mate. You'd think a taller man would need bigger waves to get the job done,
No,
but
no.
look at him, just savvying all sort of conditions.
You'd think that you'd need to warm up for an event too, but yeah, no, mate. He doesn't surf, like surfs every now and then, and just as soon as he hits the water, he just seems to surf like he did the last time he did. So I don't know how he does it, mate. He's a
Just
freak.
like riding a bike, mate. It's just like those Cook Island trips with Gleeso. It's just, good times after good times, good waves after good waves, and memories, eh? Just memories in the bank.
Exactly. All right, Luke, it's
Rocky,
time to go
mate.
to bed. I might go for a surf in the morning, so need to hit the hay.
Yeah, sick, bro. Well, thanks again for coming on and dissecting with me. You know, it's been an epic year of Comp Talk in 2024. Hope to do it all again in 2025. But I think in the meantime, you and me should definitely cover a couple of the more national and, you know, state and local comps that happen near Australia. So let's jump back on the mic again soon, brother, and talk some more shit because it's always fun.
Yeah, man. That sounds perfect. Let's do it.
All right, bro. Keep well.
See you, bro. Bye, mate.
You.